Okay, well, in the interest of trying to start on time, here we go. If you don't recognize any of the words on the screen, you're probably in the wrong place, but it's nice to see so many here. Thank you. That's who I am. I'm Rodney Tillotson. Janet Sirt is the security coordination team for JANET, the UK academic network. So that's what I do every day. This is a pretty standardized agenda. It doesn't mean anything until we put some flesh on it. The interesting bit that you might pick out here is that in 5 minutes' time, I hope we can start on at least one sort of priority item so that we get through it and don't have to plough through a lot of other agenda stuff, and we'll come back to the other things afterwards. So all this stuff we will do, but not in that order. Okay. So first it's the admin things. From this particular room, things are audio cast, so if you want to say anything, and it's for public consumption, please get up to a microphone. There's two movable microphones here, if that would help you. Please silence any mobile devices you have. Is anybody listening on Jabber at the moment? Anybody? Okay, so if anything comes up, you can throw it in. Thank you. We have a RIPE NCC scribe, thank you very much. Not the person I thought it was going to be, or he thought it was going to be, but there you go. Jerome will do it splendidly. The list of people taking part, I started off in that corner, so if you can just let it come, you know, get round the room during the next half hour, that'd be good, thank you. We are paid by results, as I say, it's the number of names on there. We've paid exactly zero for each name, but it doesn't matter. Please do that. The agenda, I'll come back to that in a minute. The minutes from the last meeting, which Emma kindly wrote up for us, I haven't actually put round to the list. I did put round an agenda which had this same URL. They're certainly up there, and anybody who wants to comment on them should do so. I suggest that anything on there... Does anybody want to say anything about the minutes just now? There was a tiny flurry of discussion on the mailing list. Okay, in that case, I honestly think that anything that you might want to comment on will come up later on, so that's okay. And last thing there, our co-chair, Sabri, is actually unable to be here this week. This happens occasionally. He has to work for a living, and the people who pay him didn't want him to come this time, so that's that. Okay. So having done that... I'd like to move straight on to the update to RIPE 206. Now, this is your cue to tell me you've no idea what RIPE 206 is. I'll tell you what it is. It's the BCP on spam behavior or spam management behavior for ISPs. Would you mind just giving me a show of hands? How many people know what this thing is and have ever looked at it? A few. Okay, well, in that case, you may have to put up with me explaining a few things, but we'll do that. Long time ago, and it's nice to see we have at least one representative of the links here, there was a BCP document produced, and we managed to get that adopted as RIPE 206, which you can find in the RIPE document repository. The other thing you can do, if I just cut this out for a minute, is that... You can either see the real RIPE 206, but I don't recommend that. I'd rather really we looked at the proposed update to it, which you can find here. It's this one. And it looks like this. And the beautiful colours, they really are beautiful, are just to draw attention to where there are changes from the previous accepted document. I think the advice needs to change, and there are two reasons for it, which I'll come back to in a minute. So I hope everybody who wants to can find that. And if you've never read it before, it's too long to read now, but you could read the orange bits and the pink bits or something. Okay, so we'll hide that one away and get back to this one. There'll be a short delay while I find the right place. No, that's good. It's come back straight away. So that's the thing we're talking about. Now, interestingly, there are... What I don't really want to do today, which is just as well because I've largely forgotten them, is to go through the changes. This was a document which suggested that if you're an ISP, there were some things you ought to do, particularly in relation to your customers, to ensure that spam and male abuse of other kinds was kept under control. Now, I know that you only control one end of it, that there's a whole lot of people out there who are doing the bad things, and it wouldn't be your customers anyway, but all the same, we thought we ought to have a basis for people to do the right thing, and we ought to write down what the right thing was. So it says you've got to have a decent contract with your customer. If somebody complains, you've got to do something. You've got to make sure they don't do network things wrong, like having open mail relays. And that was a big issue at the time we did this. It's rather less of an issue now. The corresponding thing you'd have to say now, I think, is that you would block outbound port 25, and you'd do something when you discovered viruses and bots in their computers. If you've got downstream customers, ISP-type customers, which many of you will have, and which, in fact, we have in Janet. That is all we have in Janet. We don't do anything ourselves. It's all customer networks. Then the thing is intended to be handed down to them. So it says some things about that one. I think those are the classes of things it talks about. However, time did move on, and the Lynx, who nobly subsidised the preparation of this thing the first time round, did a revision of it, which I wasn't much involved with. All quite sensible stuff, and we should have adopted it as an update to Right 206 not very long ago. Well, no, perhaps a year ago. We didn't quite get round to it. Now, there are various things we could do at this stage, but I think updating the right document is overdue. The thing looks really quite dated now. It talks all about open relays, and they just don't happen very much anymore. It's taken 5 years, but that problem is substantially solved, or put where it can be ignored, or something like that. Right. The thing that's caused us to actually to do anything at all is that URL. I'm sorry, it's so long. I don't think I put it anywhere where it's clickable, but you will actually find it there. In fact, if you look at the last page of the of this agenda from the web, it's got it at least all in one line somewhere. So this is what it adds. This is what the Lynx people believed it added, and it's not wrong. It's just that the details are a little bit more complicated. There was a particular issue about people who said, I wasn't spamming, somebody else spammed you, and it was about my website. And there were cases, there still are some cases, where people will do that, and they say, I'm not the spammer, somebody else did it, but it's actually their commercial activity. And so this thing about UBE, about hosted websites, was one of the things that we felt we ought to make a comment about. The other kind of thing that people came up with was that there was a whole industry in marketing bulk mailing tools of generally a very poor quality, but some of them quite effective, and lists of addresses, the millions CDs and stuff, and that anybody who tolerates customers who market this stuff or put out, particularly if they spam about it, of course, which they do tend to, was doing the wrong thing. And so there ought to be some words in there to say this is another bad thing which you ought to deal with if it comes up. Okay, so those are the two main changes. And as you can see, they're not very controversial now. Yes, we ought to be saying that. There was also a nice comment about abuse entries in the Right database. Now, that has to some extent been overtaken by events, because the whole way that we do abuse entries has potentially changed quite a lot. And there were a number of other little things. I don't promise that this is a proper list. In particular, there is an issue, it's an ongoing issue, that some people, if you want to report abuse, and probably some of you, for all I know, insist on people filling in a web form, which some people like and a lot of people don't like, and it's a shame to have to be. So this is actually saying you can do that if you like, but there better be an abuse mail address that you can use as well. So, all very reasonable things, these. Anybody want to stop me? Okay. Seems to me that we have essentially three choices. Now, they're not the ones that put together there. We can either just take this thing on as we more or less did the original Lynx BCP, and where it says Lynx, we can put RIPE, pretty much. There are one or two little things we have to do to stop it looking quite so much like a document that came out of the UK, make it a little bit more European. But again, we've done those once, we can do them again, it's not too difficult. Now, that's one possibility. That's the least possible work. We take this thing and pretty much dump it in as a ripe document, subject to the ripe policy process. We could say this is pretty okay, but actually the world has moved on again in the years since that was there, and perhaps we ought to put in a little bit more, but not fundamentally change the thing. Or we could say this is a relic from a bygone age. We are all dead keen to write another one. Now, dead keen to write another one is a feeling I don't often get from this working group. It actually involves real work and, you know, writing things, and it's hard. But we could do it if we have to. In either of those second two cases, we would have to offer the results back to Lynx and you know, get their at least tolerance of the approach, because, you know, it would be discourteous otherwise. It was their document, and there's a process, you know, we have to think of a process for doing that. So I have these three things. There is a fourth one where we just do nothing at all. We say RIPE 206 has been all right since the time of Moses. It can stay there. This is not really fair. But so there are these three things. We do the least we can, and the good news about that is I've done pretty much all of it already. The next one is that we might come up with some serious omissions, which we think are worth correcting now, or possibly that we think are worth correcting in a few months' time. And the other possibility is that people say this is a load of rubbish. There should be a completely different document, which sets out good practice in the right region, the right community. In which case, as I say, there's work to do. Anybody got any feelings about this? Feelings after lunch are a bit hard to come by, aren't they? Okay. Well, in that case, let's look at this one. Some cosmetic changes. The actual shape of the document looked a bit old-fashioned. So it's got rather more sort of bulleted lists, which look like something. There were some things that were quite clearly specific to the UK, which is entirely appropriate for Lynx. They're in the UK, and most of their customers are in the UK, or have a presence in the UK anyway. And so it talks about UK data protection legislation, for instance. It probably shouldn't do that. It probably should refer to something a little bit more general or possibly European. So there you are. Now, marked up copy available. This is the thing I was talking about. Since this worked so beautifully last time, let's go back to it. Now that's this thing. You can just about read that, I think. So the new things that Lynx quite reasonably added are mostly marked in yellow. The pink things are where I've changed something for some reasonable reason. I can't necessarily tell you what all the reasons were, and I don't believe anybody wants me to go through this, but if you can look at it on your screen, you may well be. You should start with the yellow bits and then look at the pink bits, and then you can, as a sort of slightly more leisurely matter, you can see whether the whole thing makes any sense to you, perhaps. So, okay, that I've done everything I knew how to do on that, nearly everything. If you want to look at the bits where I haven't done things, oh, I know how to do this. We can press this button, can't we? Try that one. Bits where I'm least happy about it are in checking some of these URLs at the end. They do all work, but I'm not convinced that some of them are the most appropriate material anymore. One or two I've updated. The reason the bits down the bottom are in pink is that the links have completely rejigged their website, so finding things is would have been a bit of a challenge for anybody who only had the old links. So some of that will probably need updating. Okay, I'm not sure that it's much use. You know, this is a wordy document, and just having it waved at you on the screen is not going to do anybody good. So I wasn't going to waste time with that. I was going to, says he confidently, working reasonably well. Look at that. So this is one possibility. Anybody got any comments at all? I do hope somebody, Andrew. Or Malcolm, I don't mind. Yes, microphone, or you can have this if you want.
Just a thought that, I mean, you say no need to suggest changes to links, having had a little bit of input into the previous version of the links document. I'm sure suggestions of changes, particularly in the URL type things, would be welcome and might be merged back in. And if they are changes to the policy that's represented by the links document, as you know, that would be rather harder. Having spent 3 months trying to get the changes resulting from the links document through the UKERNA process. But if there are better URLs, then please do suggest them and pass them on.
Thank you. There's no secrets. Links are welcome to any of this. And yes, I don't intend to do this behind anybody's back. But this one doesn't involve fundamentally renegotiating the thing at all. It's just detail. Okay. So the work to do there was fairly slight, and it's mostly done. And the outcome is about 4 years later than what we've got at the moment as the right as the right document, but probably about a year and a half out of date. I'm making up a figure, but that's probably, is that about right? So we've gained 2.5 years, but we have failed to gain a year and a half. So you're going to speak, Malcolm.
Just so that you've had some contribution. For those who don't know me, I'm Malcolm Putty, and I work for the links, and I'm essentially the document maintainer of the links version of the document. Obviously, we'd like to encourage you to do this. We think it's a good thing, and we'd like to encourage the right community to support it. If you do have any changes or things that you think are omissions from our document, we'd very much like to hear about them, and then we'll, obviously, provided the links members agree, roll that back into our version as well. So we'd like to do that. We actually tried to remove as much as we could about from the original version of the document in our recent tidying up process about specifically UK legislation and tried to make it generally applicable. But it is possible that we missed some things there. So if you've got any other things on that score to tidying up to send back to us, then we'd like to keep that updated as well. As for being a year and a half out of date, well, we adopted this in August last year. But we're not aware of anything that's changed in the meantime substantially that would mean that this couldn't be considered a current document. If other members of the right community have got suggestions as to reasons why that is, then again, we'd very much like to hear them so that we can keep it up to date. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Anybody want to react to that? It's all very English, all this we're doing. Sorry. But that's, that, in a sense, maybe the problem, you know, that it does look like it's quite nice English. It was written by somebody whose English is very practiced and beautiful, not me, it actually may make it more difficult for people for whom English is not a native language. So that's a point to raise, perhaps. Well, fine. Does anyone want to say anything? Right. In that case, you're going to hear me for a bit longer. That's one possibility. Okay. The next, there are one or two tiny details. I just haven't got through my list of changes to make. And you notice there's a comment there about the English being, it's fine for me, but I know what's there already. And I, to some extent, wrote it, didn't mind much. And there's some little points there. That's not very important. Special one at the bottom where I wrote myself a note some months ago, and I can't even find what it's about any longer, which is why there's a question mark there. Right. Supposing we say that this one is a year and a half old. It may not be a year and a half out of date. That was perhaps unnecessarily rude of me. But actually, I think there are some things that are not in there that probably should be by now. Then we have to think what sort of changes we might make. Now, I was not talking there about changing the whole shape of the document. It's just that when there's a section on don't allow open relaying, for instance, that's probably not a big issue any longer. I mean, it still applies, but most software gets it right now, and it didn't in those days. And anyway, most of the spam comes by another route. So we don't want to take 2 pages going on about something that doesn't really happen very much. But instead of that, of course, we've got spam bots of various kinds and you know, more complicated abuse through botnets. All the stuff that causes you abuse and security grief is a spam problem. You may argue with that, but that's my view anyway. And there are various other things that change, changes in good practice. So, for instance, it doesn't really lay down that you should block port 25 for the bulk of your outbound addresses. Now, you may not agree that you should for the bulk of them, but it's worth, we ought to come to some view on that, because I think it is right for most people. Other bits of good practice, you probably shouldn't be bouncing quite so much spam as you used to, and as some people still do. I know it's very irritating for spam cop to say, you bounced this spam and you shouldn't have done, but they're probably right, unfortunately. So, you know, we perhaps ought to say something about that. Thing within RIPE, nothing very serious except that the abuse information is rather differently available, and it's supposed to be better. I'm not sure we've quite finished that yet. I'm not sure. No, that's fine. But there have been changes which are not reflected, you see. And there might be things, well, I've said already, there are one or two things we might want to leave out. So these would not be complete earth-shattering changes. It's just taking out a few lines here and putting in some different lines, stuff like that. Somebody's got to do some work, but the amount of work is not enormous. And then clearly that's exactly the sort of thing down the bottom there which Malcolm would like us to feed back to the links. And they would be receptive to hearing that sort of thing. So that's... And I think I've listed here what a few of the things are that we might change. I mentioned relaying. There's a whole section for which I think I'm partly responsible on naming and shaming people. You know, if you only had 3 spammers of any kind in your network, then it might do you no harm to say you've done something about 3 of those. Since life is not like that anymore, I think that's not appropriate. It doesn't get you anywhere now. So I think that bit ought to come out. There's a lot of stuff about saying that you should send a reply to every spam complaint you get. I'm not actually sure that's true any longer, mostly because of SpamCop and various other better and worse complaining tools. Most of them don't deserve a reply, and I think we ought to say so, rather than having a document that says you should reply to everyone when you know you're not going to. On the other hand, we should say more about some of the stuff down there. I mean, proxies, you don't see a lot of proxy abuse now, but all the same, there is enough. It's better than relays, for instance. And, sorry, it's worse than relays, I should say. So we ought to mention that. And a lot of use of bots of various kinds. The whole notion of phishing wasn't in the public view when this was written. It was happening a little, but not much. And we ought to mention that, because it's a thing that happens in the... is closely associated with what people call spam, and the stuff about bounces, as I mentioned. I think that moves on to, yeah, not doing that. So, you've seen roughly how long the document is. I can't tell you how many pages, but you know, it's quite a lot of scrolling if you look at it. I don't think this business of actually dressing it up a bit and saying a few slightly different things is too awful. I think it's probably worth trying to do. Anybody got any thoughts on that, please? Does anybody want to do any? Here, look, Brian wants to do some of the work.
Volunteering my movement. No, it would be churlish of me, having volunteered to do this previously, to not say so again. I still think that the second way, the additions rather than any rewriting, is probably a better option. And yes, would be willing to certainly do some or all of that work as necessary.
Thank you. That's one. And Brian didn't say, he's too kind for this. He did volunteer to do it last time, and I failed to get him the material with which he could have made any sensible progress in anything like the right time. That's my fault, sorry. But we've got enough material ready now. It actually isn't a very big job to do some of this. So, is anybody else interested in writing some English words? Or if you like, writing some, I don't know, Czech words that we have to, Czech ideas that we have to translate into an English document? You'll stick with English, okay. Anybody else want to do the, whatever it is? Okay, thank you. Malcolm, I worry this is looking like an English show, that's all. I suppose, no, I'm sorry. Like a, what's the name for
Anglo-centric?
Certainly Anglo-centric, yeah, English speaking. It's English speaking is really what I meant, yes, okay. I know we have to produce an English document. Right, I think it is just worth looking at what we might do in a more radical way in case that actually fires somebody up, or in case somebody says, I know a document that says all this already somewhere else. We don't have to do any work to get that out of it either. So I've written down some stuff about this. Now, this, of course, is all hand-waving and vagueness. We don't know what might go here. If you just had to start from scratch, what would be the three things you'd say to an ISP that they ought to be doing about spam? One, encourage people to send it because you can make money that way. Yes? No? Encourage people to send it somewhere else because then it won't cost you money. No. Okay. Do you want a microphone? Wait a minute. This will be good, so
I think what should be done is educate customers, because at least make them understand why you're making so much trouble over some email messages in their eyes.
That's fair. And you are talking there about things they might be doing rather than the problem that they're seeing. But they think that spam is a problem that other people do to them.
Mm-hmm.
And this is mostly about them not causing trouble to other people. Do you stick to your story?
Yes.
Okay, that's fine. Thank you. Okay. Education. There is some stuff about educating customers in the previous version, so in a sense that says that that's good so far. We don't have to write a completely different thing. Okay, that's one thing. Educate people. Anything else? Easy. How do you educate people? I mean, that there is a tool for doing education. That's right. The other ways are you write long documents for them, which don't seem to make much difference. You give them exciting video fragments, which probably don't make much difference. Although I hope as many people as possible have seen the govcert.nl little film recently. Who knows what I'm talking about? Only one other person. Two other people. Okay. That's right. It takes 5 minutes, but I'm afraid on my computer I should have to reboot it into Windows because it's a Windows proprietary format that I've got. And so it'd actually take 10 minutes to show you this thing. It's nice, okay. But, it's a bit of an undertaking. They've done very well. It's a good little film. It's about... you think that you can't see bots and worms or some other things they've got, but no, they've all got little shapes and they've all got colours and they walk around on different numbers of legs and stuff like that. It's all quite exciting stuff. Okay, so educating people. You can hit them with a lath of any shape. You can write long letters for them. You can produce wonderful little films for them. We're only going to write the document, I think. But what else have you got to tell them about? What else can you do to educate people? Find them? Okay. This is a sort of moral version of the fixed stick, isn't it? Okay. That's not actually educating. That's a slightly different measure. That's the alternative to educating. That's when you can't educate them. But actually, there's a whole collection of stuff there that we need to say, most of which has already been said. We're not coming up with brand new ideas here. These are already in the framework of the document. What I asked was, what's the one thing you try and do for people, and you educate them? And I think I agree with that. Does anybody else want to say there's another thing you do for people, for customers, for customer organisations, that's most important? Here's another one in that case that's not quite education, but it's another kind, it's documentation. You really ought to tell people, and I know this is partly education, what is expected of them. Whatever size customer it is, they ought to know what they're supposed to be doing and what they're not supposed to be doing. And these days, it probably should be written down. This means that your terms of service have to be right, but they've also got to be accessible. They've got to be readable. Most service providers have actually quite watertight terms of service, but they're all a bit one-sided. They tend to say that you are a nasty little person, and whatever you do wrong, we will take it out on you. And it doesn't look like a thing that's worth anybody except a lawyer reading. Now, actually, you can do better than that. And that is one of the things that this BCP has already tried to do, to say that you can write sensible terms of service, and you ought to do that, and you ought to make sure that people understand them. And if all your customers only speak Urdu or something, then you'd better make sure there's an Urdu translation of it, and stuff like that. I don't think many UK ISPs do that, but I don't know them all. Another issue that comes up, incidentally, is, in a sense, I've almost already talked about this, how long should this be? And clearly, if you can put it on a little notice this big and stick it on everybody's screen every so often, then that's good. But I don't think you can. I think it's a little bit more complicated than that. For instance, I think of I'm not a Microsoft lover, but there are one or two things that I think they've done right. And I think they're sort of three-line answer to security of your home PC is really rather good. It gets about 90% of the problem in three lines. And here I go, I should probably get them roughly. I may have gotten them in the wrong order. One is patch your operating system, because it's Windows. The next is patch your antivirus, or update your antivirus, because it's not Windows. And the third one is do something about a firewall. What they mean is turn on the XP firewall. And really, it may not be perfect, but if people do that, they put themselves into the long tail of people who are not generally going to get hit by most of these troubles. Now, I thought that was really rather a good piece of advice on three lines. It doesn't cover everything, but it is only three lines, and it covers, I would think, 95% of the people who are supposed to read it. That's an extreme example. I think I don't have to say anything else good about Microsoft. That's the end of it, but I said that. That we can't probably do as well as that. Or can we? I mean, are there just three things we should be saying about spam? Here we go.
Brian Swenson with Microsoft.
Okay.
I'm
terribly sorry. You must realize these are not personal friends, and I wasn't rude either.
We get things right eventually. One thing I would say is we've recently introduced automatic update, where things will just patch without a user having to click. We strongly encourage users to turn on automatic update versus them manually having to go do it the second Tuesday of every month. Because a lot of spam is generated by bots, which get owned by boxes that aren't patched.
Interesting. Okay. Thank you. That's right. The front-line thing has now gone to four lines instead of three, but that's okay. It's all right.
It's just a variation of patch.
I know.
Patch, we don't even have to do anything.
That's fine. My own feelings are different, but then I may not be entirely representative. That's all right. Brian, you can say.
Sorry, it's Brian Nisbet from HENF. I'm not necessarily sure if a three-line short form is necessarily of use in discussing a document like this. I mean, there's so many different aspects, possibilities, vectors, et cetera, and possible preventative methods to do with spam. And this is a document aimed at more technical people than a home user of any, generally of any operating system. So
while Brian's talking, we'll just do this and see how long this one is. Keep talking.
But yeah, I mean, there you go. I'm not going to talk quite as long as that scroll bar is going to take, but I'm just not quite sure if that's what we should be looking for in this. And equally, I don't know if should we try and put any kind of level of silver bullet or otherwise into this document.
No, that's fair. That's fair. And this is not a document for end users. It, you are allowed to assume. Sorry, that's the length of it. It really is quite a wordy document. That's okay. It covers lots of stuff, but it is a long document. And it is fair comment that it was actually intended for. I'll leave that there for now. For ISPs who are supposed to know roughly what they're talking about.
Neil O'Reilly, yeah. UCD. That said, it may be worth adding a paragraph which is just a wrapper around those three lines under the heading, what to tell your users, customers, students, whatever they happen to be in your particular environment. It's almost a no-brainer, but it's good to have the no-brainers written down so that you know you've actually covered them.
I'm inclined to agree. I think that I don't think this quite causes us to rewrite the whole thing, but it's something we should perhaps bear in mind. I mean, there is a section on education, you see, which we picked up, which is the kind of stuff that you, you need to do for customers. We're thinking here of customers as being, consumers, domestic end users. I know not everybody's customers are, but at the end of it all, there are people who only know about one computer and they sit in front of it, and they are. They need to be talked to because there's lots of them, wherever they are. There is stuff coming down here, and it just says here, says he confidently, must ensure that documentation is available to you, to customers. But we don't actually give much example of documentation. The only example we give is stuff like this, where the point I mentioned before about conditions of service and things. Gets picked up here. Here are some specimens of things you might put in in your conditions of use, whatever they are. The purpose of having those here is that it is then notionally possible for people have to have a fairly common base of what terms and conditions are. Terms and conditions are so that it's not practical. You don't lose customers because they can go to somewhere where they don't care so much. The idea is that anybody respectable will have roughly the same kind of rules. And it removes this sort of competitive problem. Because I know, people have to make a living out of this. I have to, well, Andrew, again. Yeah. There's more.
You can take this as a free offer or self-promotion, but there is a fact sheet for users on spam on the UKANA website, which is free for non-profit use, which I haven't managed to browse to it in time, but I think covers most of the issues. It certainly covers both how to respond when you receive it and how not to become a vector for spreading it, which seem to be the two halves of the problem. If it doesn't cover the key points that you want it to cover, then let me know and I'll update it. But if you like it, it's there for use. If you don't like it, tell me and I'll fix it. It's on www.ja.net. Follow documentation fact sheets.
Yeah, I'll if somebody reminds me to do it at all, like our splendid scribe, I will send round the URL in a couple of days. So there is stuff there. One other question that I just sort of vaguely threw out and nobody picked up at the time was whether this is actually all written out somewhere. Remember what we're talking about here is this is the right meeting. This is the right working group. The community we're talking about is a community of service providers. So this is good practice for service providers. So we're not actually, it's not quite the same as the document that that Andrew is picking up. That takes the place in it that he was talking about. That's all right. So that isn't the document we're looking for. It's conceivable there is a document somewhere that is exactly what we're looking for. I'm not aware of this. But if anybody knows one, that they should say so. Okay. Well, the only sort of half feeling I have here is that we don't go for a complete rewrite because that means ideas and it's difficult and it'll take a long time, so it won't. So instead we're going to go for this sort of thing. Okay. going to put in a bit more of this and a bit less of that. We have three people who will conspire to actually write some stuff on the basis of what is already there. So there will not be big changes. The tidying up's been done. It's now a question of just deciding we don't want those bits any longer and things like that, which we'll do on the mailing list as time goes on. This slide, which actually came before it, mentions process down at the bottom. I was about to launch on the RIPE policy development process, and I actually fell at the first hurdle, because if you look at the front page, it says, firstly, you have to send in a something or other. It doesn't say where you send it to, so it's all right. I can solve that problem, but it means I haven't done it yet. So we'll go through all that stuff. And the next stage that anybody notices is that we then have drafts that are visible somewhere, and we need people to comment on them. And the mailing group, the working group mailing list, is the right place for that. So we'll do it. Anything else about this stuff? Oh, yes, all right. And do you want your own microphone?
I could broadcast over that. Very much a suggested kite flying exercise, if you like, whether we're at this communities at the stage where active probing of custom machines to see if they are active relays is acceptable, desirable, whatever. We have a service on Janet which does probe the advertised mail relays of our sites to check that they're not relaying outbound. I know there's been some discussion among ISPs in the UK about at what point it's going to become industry good practice to actually start proactively testing your end user machines for whether they are infected by anything. Any feelings? Yeah, there's quite a lot of sucking of teeth in the UK about it as well. thoughts from users as to whether they'd like it? Or is that the next revision of this?
It's actually an interesting... It's quite hard to work out how you say that in a context where you may have several layers of service provision. Uh-huh. So I would worry a little bit about how you say it. I think the idea is not really desperately contentious. Mm. I know some people hate having their mailers tested, but it's not so bad if somebody's warned you, and it isn't at all bad if yours works. Mm. It's only embarrassing if yours doesn't work. You know, that's really the trouble. Yeah. I know that there are similar things you don't say, like repressive regimes are no threat to you if you're not doing anything wrong. it's not quite like that. Yeah, okay, that's a point we ought to consider. There's a space for it. Okay? Right, so we have, I think, consensus, that is to say, I've said it several times and nobody's argued, to go ahead proposing some relatively, some small-scale amendments to the links document, which together with the changes from the earlier to the later links document will probably change about a quarter of the existing RIPE 206. We'll try and move that forward, and please do respond if anything comes round to you. Okay, so I should have had that one there. We seem to have chosen that. Timetable will be the timetable essentially of the RIPE policy process, which will get us in practice up to the next RIPE meeting. Not technically quite as far as that, but in practice it might. Okay. Now, this is... I will submit this document. I will even find the machinery for doing it. Yes, thank you. yes, that's right. Okay, now, what I won't do is flick back to the rest of our agenda looks. We are roughly on time. Not quite, but it's all right. Traditionally, we look at what's happening in the world of spam, and what's happening in the world of anti-spam, which is, of course, a much more dangerous place. And I've written down things I have noticed in the last few months. I have noticed that the forged headers, which any decent spam message has, are a little bit harder to identify. I really don't know sometimes whether something that appears to come from a Janet customer did or didn't. I have to ask them. I can't do it any longer. Does anybody else notice this? One, that's good, there's two of us. Yeah, I think, you know, I have found general consensus, not in this particular forum, that is a bit, it's getting a bit worse. So, I mean, it's not very difficult. I'm astonished they don't get them better. I mean, most of the forgery is pretty obvious, and it has been for a long time. They really should be doing better than that. And they seem to put a lot of effort into the hard part of dreaming up domain names which are plausible, whereas actually, you know, if they got the timestamps right, it would be a lot easier for them and things like that. But they are, there's a lot of it that is harder to guess now, harder to guess right. And that's, as I say, it's not rocket science. It's just somebody who knows roughly what the thing is about, sitting down and tinkering with some of the bulk mailing products and scripts and stuff. And they've done it. The other is the use of bots and botnets. I hope somebody knows a lot more about this than I do. I'll tell you my story, which is short, that a botnet is a botnet is a botnet, and they can do anything you like. And one of the things, but not the only one of the things that they do is to sell their resource, this distribution or injection resource, depending which way you look at it, to people who want to do mass mailing. You know, it's a sound business model. The risks are very slight. I know one or two people have been, come back to this in anti-spam in a minute, one or two people have been locked up for doing this kind of thing, but it's only one or two. We're not making, it doesn't look like an interesting criminal offence, really. But that's how it's going to be, I think. Has anybody else got a different story to tell about botnets and spam? Or botnets and mail abuse? I would say there was more phishing going on, but I said that last time, and I don't, you know, it's a fairly steady increase now. Some people think that's getting a bit more sophisticated and more effective. More convincing. I don't know if it actually achieves anything. Well, some people think that. Have I ever been taken in by that? No, I don't think so, actually. There are occasional messages where the social engineering, this is not phishing, where the social engineering is such that I have actually read a message that I would have wished to throw away, but not very many. And that's a slightly different issue anyway. Okay, well, in that case, nothing much has changed. Well, it has actually. These are fairly fundamental. And the better header forgery means that SpamCop doesn't stand a chance any longer. SpamCop and SpamX or whatever the other things are nearly always, well, not nearly always, are far too often going to send the complaint to the wrong person. So that is actually quite an issue. And the use of the widespread use of botnets, it gets you another way.
Sorry, I was just going to say that the header forgery is kind of a problem because the amount of false spam complaints we get means that we pay less attention to actual legitimate abuse problems at our site.
Okay. Yes, I believe it's a problem. Next. Anything else that people have seen happening in the spam world? Spam is new and it's this. I don't think so either. I think it's like Windows XP, it's reached a stable state.
Just a general remark. I mean, I'm a victim of spam.
Well, so am I.
I'm not an ISP.
You need a microphone. All victims of spam. All right, if you walk to that one.
Okay, now it's fine. Okay, I'm just one of the victims of spam. I'm a user, I'm not an ISP, and I find it very interesting what you're doing and what you're trying to oppose on ISPs, but I'm missing the motivation from the ISP side, because at the same time, the guys who could stop it, who are the ISPs in my opinion, they're trying to sell to the users, to the customer, a service to stop it. So, are we not dreaming a bit?
What sort of service were you thinking of?
No, I mean to block some spam, you know, to get together with some of the spam blocking companies and to sell it as a value add.
I don't think that's, I can see what you're getting at, that there is some, I don't think there's actually a commercial conflict of interest there. No, all right, there is in principle.
Of course, the ISPs make money out of it.
Okay, so the more there is, the more money they make. Is that, yeah, that's what you're coming to? Okay. That's a serious point, yeah? Can you really think what we can say or do about that?
excuse me. While we're a non-commercial ISP as a research network, and we offer anti-spam services to our customers for no added cost, it's actually a model that's followed by an awful lot of commercial ISPs as well, that they will offer their anti-spam solutions for quite a low cost, certainly my experience in Ireland, and the larger ISPs across the states, certainly their webmail clients and all the rest, have their anti-spam solutions free. So it's not the ISPs that are necessarily making money out of this, but it's large parts of the commercial anti-spam industry, which are not necessarily the same thing, where yes, there is an inherent point where if they were successful in their mission, they would put themselves out of business. But I don't necessarily believe it's the ISPs that are actually the potential who have the conflict of interest here. I think it's the companies who just have anti-spam or anti-virus systems that in place that they do very definitely charge for.
Yeah, that's fair. It's like the insurance industry. The insurance industry is perhaps there to do itself out of business, but it really doesn't want to be put out of business. And it's the same thing. I don't actually... Okay, that is an interesting philosophical issue, and it does stop you trying to do some things. I don't think it stops us trying to do the things we proposed at the moment of any kind. Okay. Anything else to say about what spam is doing?
Next is, what's happening in anti-spam? I shall be speaking out of turn, and in some cases about things I don't really know much about here. These are just some things I've noticed happening. There has been some litigation. I'm in danger of saying two good things about Microsoft in one day here, but I have been taking a number of people in Microsoft to one side and saying Microsoft have lots of things, including money, and they can buy better lawyers than most spammers can, and actually they've done some of that, and it has had some effect. So I'm grateful for that. I don't know how scalable it is. I just don't know that. I don't wish to encourage really the great might of a very small number of players in any of this, but it's done something. I've forgotten what the Soloway issue is, but he's one of the great spammers of all time, has been put somewhere, as have a few other people. Stubberfield, also known as Jeremy James, is he's not. I don't think he's actually in jail, but he's having to work fairly hard to appeal against going to jail and things of that nature. So there is some stuff happening on that. I'm not sure whether the recent botnet operators and creators who have just in the last week been convicted and given fairly trivial sentences are directly relevant to spam, but they are clearly they're clearly related to some other kinds of abuse. That's litigation. It's not legislation. People haven't passed. Well, there are some new laws, but I don't think they're very dramatically different. Okay. These are just the things I've seen. You might have seen some much better things. So do say. I've seen a certain sort of settling down in the sender authentication camp. I'll say a bit more about that later. I've got another slide that's in section C about that. So we'll talk about that later, if you don't mind. There's stuff to say there. That's a development. The traditional blacklist, blocklists, the DNS blocklists, seem to be,
difficult to know. They seem to be polarizing, really. There are the commercial ones which work, but over which people feel they haven't got much control. Like, and maps is the classic example. They used to be maps, and they were all these people whose names you know who did things for you. And now it's firstly they went commercial, and you stopped hearing the names any longer, and they all left anyway. And then they became Kelkia, was it, which you never heard of, and they started making decisions of their own. And now they've been swallowed up by Trend Micro, and you have to pay them quite a lot of money under many circumstances. And people, I think, have incorrectly started complaining about the quality of their lists. Well, there are things you can say about that, but there's some sort of gradual movement in there. They are really seeking to be, they talk about reputation services, and it seems to me that you can make a logical connection between reputation services, whatever that means, and running a blacklist. But actually, I think they're trying to give a slightly different message there. There's funny things happening. At the other end of it, so that's the sort of, they wish to be seen as very big, important players. And it is true that, of course, if suddenly people stop practicing male abuse, they will have to go and grow cabbages. There will not be work for them. So they don't quite want to eliminate it. They just want to make sure that, that they can be seen to be doing something. The other block lists, of course, there's a very long tail to block lists. Some of them are extremely hairy and dangerous and aggressive, and some people love them for that. But in most production environments, it's not a very good idea. Well, you make your own choice. Depends what your production environment is like. But there are good reasons not to take some of the more outrageous lists. So if you have to think... I think MAPS is entirely respectable, despite its strange commercial position. The spam house lists, SBL, is entirely respectable, okay. The CBL, the combined block list, would not be respectable if it combined everything, but I don't think it does, and that's actually probably all right. Now, typically, can other people name one or two respectable, useful lists? Is it NJE, not just another block list, okay. I don't know who does that. I've just never looked into it. But yes, people generally speak well of that one. That's the NJABL. You'll find it with Google. I don't know where it is. There are some lists that about URLs that are likely to come up in. This is content analysis, really, rather than source analysis. They're using the things for different purposes. So there are some interesting developments in that, which I really hadn't come prepared to give a long talk about. Anybody else? One of the, can I do this? I can't remember whether I've said this anywhere else. One of the interesting things to try and do with the content scanners of all kinds, incidentally, is if you can possibly arrange to reject messages on the basis of content scanning, rather than accepting them and then having to decide whether to throw them away or send them back. It really is a great step forward. It's very difficult to do this with certain mail products. The one that begins with EXCH is not an easy one to do that with. But then it's not intended, as far as I can see, to be at the outward edge of people's mail services. And when you put something else there, you've got some different problems, but you can probably get this one right then. So it's highly desirable that things should, you consider every chance to throw away, not sorry, not throw away, to reject a mail transfer. So if you get it from a bad IP address, that's what the DNS block lists are about. If it says it has a stupid sender, then that's the next thing you can do. If it's for a recipient that you haven't got, that's another good reason just to cut it all off at that stage. If you can't get rid of it for any of those reasons, then you're going to have to look at the content. And if you're going to look at the content, you can look at the content. If you're going to look at the content, if you can possibly hold off accepting the message until you've looked at the content and be prepared to reject it at that stage, the responsibility is not yours. The message hasn't passed across the internet. It's actually somebody else's problem. But in many cases, it will be the problem of the of somebody much closer to the spammer than you are. It's a good thing. This is probably something we ought to consider documenting. Plenty of people have documented bits of it. I don't think I've got another page of this. Oh yes, one more. Oh yes. those of you who are of Nigerian extraction will value the value this one. The Nigerians have won the Ig Nobel Prize for literature, I think it is.
I want to know if they're going to turn up at the award ceremony.
It's already happened. No, they didn't. The mail to them got lost, I think. okay. But other bits of updating. I haven't actually got anything to say about legislation. There are little bits that picked up. I don't think there's anything fundamental happened. It's just worth noticing that last time I worried about this, Australia was pretty good. Have we got any Asia-Pacific people around at the moment? Okay. And there was all the Asia-Pacific, I can't what it's called now, there's a consortium or cartel against abuse, and they were doing some good things. And the Australians have good laws, that's what it comes to, and they're fairly vicious and people do something about it. And the UK has several times been singled out as really having fairly wishy-washy laws about spam, which don't enable you to do a great deal. And although I know it is not strictly related, putting somebody away for 3 months, you get more than that for not taxing your car, pretty much. It's not quite true, but there are strange messages there. We don't seem to get it quite right. You just wait till I'm Prime Minister, and things will be different. I'm not aware that there's a lot of new product coming in. There was a phase, which I think is substantial. It may not be over, but it's the best is over. Of appliances that people would stick in, the border of their mail world. There are now lots of those. They're pretty much commodity. There are only little things that tell them apart, distinguish between them. So I don't think there's anything very new to say there. Okay. I don't know if there are products that cause a particular trouble. We started talking about products when various products couldn't be prevented from relaying, or were very, seemed difficult. So there were actually bad products we're talking about then. But I don't think that's so much of an issue now. There aren't many bad products. There are some that are inappropriate. But there may be products that are actually supposed to help and which may indeed help. But if I say mail front-end appliances, I think I've got a whole class of things there, and I'm not sure that there are any really different classes. Okay. Does anybody want to talk about one they think is wonderful that every home should have? Right. I have to say that where I am every day, I have to talk to small colleges. And small colleges in the UK are places where they've perhaps got 50 staff and several hundred students. They have a very small IT department, generally. They will probably outsource most of their stuff. And it's quite common for them to have been sold one or more appliances which are supposed to somehow do firewalling or deal with their mail or something like that. And whether the products are good or not, it's really quite hard to tell, because we only hear about it when something goes wrong. And when something goes wrong, almost always this outsourcing will let them down, because they've actually bought different products from two different people and they don't fit the right way round, or because the outsourcer just sold them a box and didn't understand it. So I'm not convinced that... It's not clear to me how much it helps quite which kind of people. It ought to be a good idea. Recent list discussion. I think of various lists, but actually that's really about the working group mailing list, which has been pretty quiet. But one thing did come up, didn't it? And it was grey listing. Have I mentioned that somewhere? Have I put it somewhere? Nope, maybe not. Grey listing. Does anybody want to give? Who thinks grey? Who doesn't know what grey listing is? Well, that's good then. Everybody else can tell them what it is. What's grey listing? Volunteer. We have 40 people. We should be able to get at least 40 different answers on what grey listing is. Go on then. Stand up a microphone and say it. Thank you.
It's the temporary rejection of mail heading to a mail server on the basis that you then expect, if it's coming from a proper SMTP sending host, to be retried after a certain period. So you keep a tuple of the, I guess, the sender, the destination, and the originating server, and then check that when it comes back in and say, ah, yes, this is the second attempt I've had. It must be a proper SMTP sending source and accept it.
Seems fairly concise and uncontroversial. Okay, anybody got any questions? Peter. Here you are.
All the way through. Thank you. Thank you for describing the grey listing thing without any judgment, so I can ask evil questions. Anybody believe this is really a bad thing besides me? Okay,
There were a handful of people who thought it was a bad thing.
Okay, Lars Lehmann here. I'd say it has a few bad consequences. Whether that as a whole makes it be a bad thing is maybe strong words, but it does definitely have bad consequences.
Okay.
Yeah, okay.
Can you own up to what the bad consequences are?
So my bad consequences are that it is pushing the problem towards the infrastructure, which means that you get rid of the problem on the cost of everyone else, because the stuff that is not spam has to stay in some queue somewhere. And that is probably not a problem for small mail servers, but if I have a high volume mail server and I am, subjected to grey listing in various places for the first time because they are suspected to maintain a whitelist, of course, then lots of mails don't get delivered on time, and that not only does not please the users, but also puts a burden on the sender's side.
Okay, that's fair. I'll say some things about it, but other people probably do better. There's an interesting question there of the sort of timeliness that people expect of email. Now, I know in principle you should be able to get mail anywhere within a few seconds. I think it's a mistake to regard email as a real-time activity. I think one of its great virtues is that it's actually not real-time, and that's almost at a human level, that I'm delighted for people to deliver stuff to a mailbox that I don't have to look at until I feel like it. It goes on from there a bit. Now, if you think email is supposed to work instantaneously, then obviously any delaying trick for legitimate mail is a bad idea. I accept that. I don't actually have that feeling about email, so it doesn't worry me too much. The capacity, the resource issue is, of course, harder to argue with. Yeah. Anybody else got radical ideas? Radical idea on the right there. Let him get there first.
Yeah, sure.
All right. Yeah, you can actually do that.
Just as my thoughts on Peter's input here is, might be interesting if that is really a problem, because I don't expect grey listing to show up on every mail server at any certain point of time, but it will be maybe just slowly implemented in some case. And if that is really a burden on the infrastructure, would be interesting if anyone has any numbers or information if that is really a problem. And on the other side, it can also, on the long term, maybe get a relief for the infrastructure because we have less spam, hopefully, maybe, because of that. But that is maybe just my positive thinking.
that's clearly true in principle. One of Peter's objections, I think, is that it I mean, he talked about infrastructure as if there was only one end to infrastructure, and then pointed out that actually it was his end he was worried about. And if you are a sender, then this is an embarrassment to you, I think. Brian, were you going to say something different?
Well,
oh, okay.
If you want to respond.
Yeah, I would just respond.
Thank you.
I was not so much caring about whether it works or not, but whether it does any harm or not. And I am not very optimistic regarding the reduction of spam, since all methods of protocol education have led to a situation where the spammers, in many cases, adhere closer to the protocol than the providers of, say, ordinary mail software that starts with demanding headers be of a certain shape and handling just send 8-bit and so on and so forth. So spammers have quite clueful technical consultants. Not only those, but they seem to have a, say, gravitation there.
Fair comments?
Somehow. So. I'm sorry?
Why do they always get the dates wrong if they have strong technical consultants? I mean,
I can answer that. It's because the technical consultants live on a different planet.
Yes, they work at night and never work.
Yeah.
No, it says it appears at the top of the mail.
Oh, yeah, or the bottom or something. Yeah.
No, it's because Outlook doesn't look at the date on the message. It orders them by the date received.
That is a different issue, I think. It's a real issue, but it's a different one. Brian, it must be time to change the subject.
Yeah, no, well, it's while greylisting unquestionably does remove some mail from, some spam from inboxes, it also, unfortunately, as was alluded to, can have a fairly high false positive rate if certain large mail systems, such as Yahoo's, was certainly a problem, and there was misconfiguration which didn't resend after a temporary reject for a while. There was a couple of other ones which had the same problems, so special permissions had to be put in place for such large mail systems. So it's quite a high false positive rate, and in addition to that, with the timeouts and the fact that those tuples aren't kept forever, they're only kept for limited periods of time, it means that those delays do kick in. And while I would agree that email is not a instant messaging system by any stretch of the imagination and should not be considered so, it is, however, occasionally very annoying if someone is going to send you a mail and it suddenly starts taking 2 hours to reach the point. So I mean, I think it does remove spam, but I'm just not sure if the problems inherent in it and the problems inherent in messing around with those particular bits of the protocol are necessarily worth the price.
Thank you. I cautiously started out. Everybody, I think, said they knew what greylisting was. So how many people are keen on greylisting? Okay. You know, it has some following. And obviously, like everything else, the people who do it think it's wonderful. And the people who don't have probably decided it isn't. Okay. Fortunately, there isn't time to say much about these things, about sender authentication. Dave Crocker was quite happy to come and talk to us about sender authentication, by which he meant DKIM, except that he's actually been unable to turn out, not just here, but to some other things. This month. He might yet come back and talk to us about that. But I think we could... Was that a hand up? Second?
What do you want to know?
He was going to talk to us about it. If you wish to deliver a sort of missionary sermon, you're quite welcome, Patrick.
I thought you would do 15 seconds.
Well, that's
maybe,
fine.
Maybe 3 minutes.
If you want to come back in a few minutes, do. Is that all right? Okay, thank you. In that case, I will suppress my much briefer and much rougher summary of what it's about. I have actually written a couple of tiny pages that follow in a minute. Okay, so there are these things. Is there anybody who hasn't heard of SPF? You're allowed to say so. Okay, not many. That's good. And anybody who hasn't heard of DKIM? Rather more. That is likely. It's actually a more recent entry onto the scene. They are both means of, in some sense, authenticating the sender of a message. They make it possible to detect that you don't want to accept a message at a reasonably early stage in the protocol, and they can do something. They all require a great deal of cooperation between consenting adults, They all tinker with the DNS in various ways. And again, everybody who likes them thinks they're wonderful, and the other people don't. They've got some fundamental problems, which can, you know, like everything, you can get around it, but you might not want to bother. A little bit more of that in a minute. Filtering, we've talked about spam filtering services, and certainly, I mean, my view is that filtering is just one of those things you have to do because the world is a bad place, and that one day we might not bother, but for the moment you do it because you have to stay alive. I don't think filtering is very exciting myself, but there's a lot of it about, and people do that. Bounce suppression, I'm sure I'd written it somewhere, I couldn't remember it was here. Does anybody not know what I'm talking about there? Okay, I will do it concisely. If a spam message gets bounced to the person it claims to have come from, it's almost always a mistake, because the origin is nearly always forged. The same is true of virus messages and most mail abuse, in fact. So you ought to, we ought to encourage people just not to do that. That unfortunately means the thing I was talking about earlier, finding out soon enough in the protocol exchange that you're really not going to take this message, and you're not going to end up with the problem of a message that you've accepted but are now not prepared to deliver. You can still decide to throw it away, but then you have this issue, see, about mail no longer being a reliable transport. My own view is that it stopped being a reliable transport now, and you probably shouldn't worry too much about that bit, but people differ on that one. And this is this has become a real issue for some good people, because spam cop has started picking it up and saying, we know you didn't send this, but you did bounce it. And you know, this is often true. It's impossible to eliminate all incorrect bounces, I think, but it's possible to eliminate nearly all of them, and people probably should. Essentially, you get a lot of things sent back. For instance, you should never send back a message saying this had a virus in it. If you know it's got a virus in, you have to assume it didn't come from who it said it did, so don't send it back. The same is true of things where you've looked at the content and decided this is spam, but we're still sending it back. You mustn't do it. Yes, sorry, Brian. Do you want to save yourself a walk? You know, it's too late.
Risk of bothering you all with my voice again. Just in addition to the sender verification bits that you already have up there,
yep.
Just want to mention client SMTP validation.
Yes.
Which I don't know if you have mentioned there or otherwise. It's currently, I'm saying this on not on behalf of, but as a friend of mine, as the person who's writing this, Tony Finch from University of Cambridge, I thought I should mention it here, and it's currently it's not an officially chartered IETF working group as yet, but it is in development, using very similar ideas. I mean, the top line of it is CSV, which comprises two protocols, the CSA and DNA, and it retrofits hello authentication and SMTP, and then the DNA part specifies how to discover and use an RBL based on domain names to do sender verification. I mean, it's Googleable and readable, but is another option.
This is CSV, is what you have to remember, isn't it?
It's CSV, it's client SMTP validation is the name of the thing, but it's something that's largely been put, and certainly you think from Tony's point of view, as a alternative to SPF and other such things.
This, unfortunately, is the difficult thing about all these. They are all easily the best thing since sliced bread for the people who wrote them and the people who decided to take them up. And it's much harder for the rest of us to choose. I'm sure that can be made to work. And the interesting thing about nearly all of them is that they depend to a lot, before they really achieve much, they depend on substantial uptake globally. And in particular, on some sort of uptake by, MSN, AOL, and Yahoo, for instance. There are issues there. They have commercial issues. They have all sorts of different interests. I don't know where CSV is in that. SPF has got a proponent. DKIM has got somebody who was interested in it once, you know, among the big players. It's an interesting human activity to work out what's going to happen. Yes, please do. Please do that. That's fine. I'm sorry, I missed that one out. This is my Patrick is in a minute going to tell us in more than one sentence what DKIM does. In two okay, there's one here, but it doesn't reach very far. Sorry. Okay, it's fine. Okay, sorry. The central SPF used to be called. It's now called Sender Policy Framework. It used to be Sender. Oh, I can't remember what it was. Preferred something or other. What was it called? Permitted from. That's right. It's essentially listing in the DNS for your domain the mailers that are allowed to send mail claiming it comes from your domain. So you do a check, you say, this seems to come from hotmail.com, what's the list of things I'm supposed to accept hotmail.com originator addresses from, and if it's one of those, that's fine, if it's not, you turn it down at that stage. And the answer, the list of acceptable sources is in the DNS, and deployment is, you put your own mailers in your own domain, your own sort of zone of the DNS, and then you wait for other people to do the same. And it's the waiting that gets you in all these. People love it who do it. And people who don't think, oh, this is a pain because it doesn't work when I come to write my mail that I say comes from my usual address. And it's honest. I know who I am. Right, know who I am. But the people who are getting this, who are SPF fanatics, say, I've never heard of this Right thing that's sending me mail that claims to be from you. So roaming doesn't work very easily, and there are problems with that. And forwarding is a little bit of an issue too. URL for it there. Okay? Now, I was going to say this, but I won't. Instead, I will take this one out because it saves. It's probably work, won't it?
So let's hope that this works. Oh, it does. Oh, sorry. Okay, so quickly walk through what I think the status of DKIM is to explain you the technology itself. There are several people working on this DKIM thing, including people from Cisco and SendMail and some other people. So what is this? The whole idea is that the sending MTA is doing a digital signature of the body and selected headers of an email, and the receiving MTA can then verify whether the signature is valid or not, like standard digital signature thing. It's designed so it minimizes the impact on existing email systems, so it should be like invisible to normal mortals. It uses DNS for key management. Doesn't require certificate authorities, etc. DKIM is a hybrid of two other messaging solutions that you might have heard of, identified internet email and domain keys. So if you hear people talking about domain keys and identified internet mail, in that case, they are not up to date. It's all DKIM nowadays. So the status is that there's a draft specification submitted in the IETF. There was a BOF held at IETF 63. There will be a BOF at IETF 64 as well. There is some work on work in progress on signing policy, and the reason why it's still a BOF is that the security part of the IETF wanted to have more specific specification over what the actual threat is, and then what threat spam is to email system, and then a check mark saying which one of these problems do DKIM really solve. So before that document is produced, a working group is not approved. So that's what people are working on, and there is a draft for that. So what does it look like? Let's see. Blah, blah, blah. Okay, here. So the technical overview, which is most interesting here, I think, is that it signs body and selected header fields. It's up to the sender to decide what header fields are signed. The signature is transmitted in a new header field that is added. So instead of, like, if you know, ordinary, like, you there are two ways, for example, to sign a mail with PGP today. Otherwise, one way is to do an inline signing where the signature is in the message body itself. The other one is to use multi-part signature specification where you add a multi-part abstraction layer wrapping around the message itself. In what DKIM do is that it adds another header instead. It stores the public key that you use to verify the signature in the DNS. It uses a new resource record type, but fall back to TXT, and that's something that still is under discussion, because people think that using a new, an unknown resource record type is so difficult. Anyways, I have a very strong personal opinion on that, but this is not the DNS meeting. So it looks like this. You see the new header, which is DKIM-signature:. It talks about what encryption mechanism are used in signatures, how that is created, what the domain is, has been used for the keys, when it's sent, and then you have some headers, subject, from, and date, and then the signature itself. So this one says with the H equal sign that the subject, from, date, plus the body of the message is signed, and B is the Base64 encoded signature itself. So the signature itself, you see here, it's you take the D and S part of the signature, and this gives you the DNS query for the record in DNS where you're supposed to find where the public key is stored. There are some controversial points that are still discussed. One is that this mechanism doesn't use SMIME, PGP, and PEM. The answer for that is, of course, that these have different goals. It's not intended to displace or replace. What I personally have been a little bit nervous about is the fact that this one signs the actual bytes in the message itself, which means that a MIME transformation, for example, adding a multipart wrapper of the message body itself, that's something that is possible to do without changing, for example, an ordinary proper PGP signature, but it will break this. So what this is doing is actually signing the bytes that is moved over the wire. There are also some discussions regarding body length counts, because there are many different ways for mailing lists exploders to change the body of messages, for example, to add a signature, add some text at the end of the message. And the question was then, how do we solve that? Well, we solve that by having the signing party tell how many bytes of the body of the message is actually signed, because then it might be able to, the message will be able to move and go to a mailing list where the mailing list exploder is adding data at the end of the message body without, and still have the actual signature be valid. This, of course, is a problem with mailing lists today, like Mailman and stuff. Like, they do change the body of a message, and that breaks digital signatures. That's not a good thing. As I said, this is a controversial point. We don't know what the actual solution is. There's also an extensive, if it is the case that we have per user keys in DNS, it may hurt DNS, some people think. There are also, it's also the case that this signature mechanism does not protect against replay attacks. So if it is the case that one of those messages are found, there's still the ability to do a replay attack. And of course, denial of service attacks by sending in text with illegal signatures that have to be verified that will eat the CPU, but that's a normal thing. There's also a question on what kind of canonicalization algorithm is to use. We are looking at what PGP is using and don't really know whether that is the best one or whether we should use something else. So there are like more things to do: define the DNS resource record, the sender signing policy document on how a sender can publish what policy is used, and also the threats document, as I said, which is a separate document that is produced currently. So I think that's it.
Christy, anybody want to interrogate Patrick about it?
Yes. Yes, absolutely. I will do that. Yes, yes. Lehman.
Yes, this is Lars Lehmann. When you talked about
normalization, did you also take into account transfer agents that modify the content transfer encoding?
Yeah, to make sure that the content transfer encoding, for example, is not 8-bit, that's part of the canonicalization.
Okay.
But I don't know how much you know how the canonicalization of PGP works. For example, it removes line breaks and white spaces and also removes the 8-bit of octets, etc. It's really, really ugly. There are those kind of things people talk about, but also the content transfer encoding, because according to the SMTP standard today, if the 8-bit MIME SMTP negotiation fails, an intermediate MTA is supposed to change the content transfer encoding, and we need to make sure that the signature is still valid. In the specification for multipart signature, it is said very explicitly that a digital signature should only be made on a 7-bit content transfer encoding. That's part of the specification for multipart signature that was written in 1996. So 8-bit bodies is that is the
dying
same kind
creatures.
Of mechanism used. Excuse me?
They are dying creatures.
The 8-bit, the ones that handle 8-bit? That doesn't handle 8-bit. Sure, absolutely. That is true. But it's still the case that is what the SMTP standards say today and the MIME standard we have. We can talk more about this.
I suppose one other question that Patrick has sort of avoided addressing, really. Is this going to fly or not?
No. Well, I think it will fly. We started to see at Cisco. We are using this ourselves, not at the mail at the main like Cisco.com mail, but we have we use it for approximately 10% of our employees at Cisco. Currently are signing things with DKIM, and we started to see the first messages signed using DKIM about 2 months ago. And I saw an announcement with the latest version of Spam Assassin 3.0.2 or something that included verification of this. So I think if it is the case that we're going to sign part of the some headers and also the body and put that in a header, what DKIM is doing, I think this is the way of doing it. Whether that really will help and whether everyone will actually implement this, I don't know. But there are quite a large number of implementations at the moment, and SendMail, Yahoo, Cisco, and others are currently implementing this. And if it's also in Spam Assassin, it exists out there. So personally, I think for spam, we need to use like whatever tools we have, and this is just one of them.
Thank you. This was what I made up, you see. I wasn't going to take so long, and it hasn't got so much information, but I don't think I was lying. I didn't mention that you signed the body as well as part of the header. Okay.
And you can choose yourself what header.
Oh, yes, sorry, that's right. There are good pages about this. That one, I mean, it may not be the best place to look it up. I think it probably is the right place to look it up, but certainly you can find out fairly well what's going on from that URL. Done all that. Not going to spend any time on this because it's tea time, really. We haven't done anything very, very exciting just there at the moment anyway. Is there any, I think we don't have to ask this question because we have picked up one or two things that don't fit into the Right 206 framework that people wanted to hear about, so we'll deal with that. Anything else people want to say? It would be nice to think there won't be another working group meeting because spam will all be over, but it won't be, so, yeah. Fine. Things we could do in the future, you can read this somewhere else, you don't have to read it from me. Down the bottom it says tutorials. If we think there are things that we ought to instruct each other on, or, you know, educate each other on, or for that matter do it as a plenary presentation to a right meeting, particularly, if you've got something you think we ought to do, then you should say so. You can either say it to me privately or to the list, or if you volunteer to do it as well, that's better still, of course. Here we are. The agenda for Right 52, unless something really happens, will be very much the same. If people want to offer things they're going to talk to us about, that's fine. Is there anything else anybody wants to say? Thank you. I have one more thing. Is anybody...
Maybe I'll come to see. Oh, I see.
One thing, you advertised the GovCerts, I'm not going to try and pronounce the Dutch, for which the microphone will be very grateful. The video, I've downloaded it, apologies to anybody else who was trying to use the wireless network at the time that 12 meg was coming my way. So if anybody wants to see it, I'll have a completely untested demo and see if it'll work.
I know it works on mine. If anyone wants to see it, we can do that now.
Okay, you've got a tested version.
Okay, so yeah. That's it. No, please do write on the list if you can. Otherwise, thank you very much, and I hope see you another time. Thank you very much. All done. All right, so we shut this lock down. Yeah, it would have been that.
Normally,
that's you, okay. Right?
Yeah.
So it's not normally you?
They weren't there. Sometimes out of hours or something.
Let me see if we can make this work, shall we?
They're usually pretty good at it. Seems okay,
so I'm just waiting for this to fire up. Oh, of course, it's this stupid thing, isn't it? That's right. Rats, I really don't want that. Say again. Right, that's okay, it'll do something now. And I do want it to do that, it's okay. Right, sorry. What? Blank. Sound will be tricky. I may just have to bend the microphone down to the loudspeaker. It does need sound. Right, where have I got to with this then? See if I can press a button so I can see it. Sorry, I'm trying to get. Oh, I see. What's happened to my video now? What's going on here? Okay, I've got something on the screen. Why doesn't it like all this? Supposing I probably ought to log in next, actually. I don't ever use this with Windows, so I've no idea what. I've been doing that. But while it was still sorting itself, I think it didn't like it. That looks okay. I'm going to wait for that to go out as well. That's okay. This is what I wanted, you know. The only purpose of Windows is updating Windows, actually, but this, yeah, okay. Right, let's see if we can get that to show on the screen. Yeah, that's okay, and it's still here as well. Okay. That's because I... Can I bigger this? Does it work? Do I have to press start or something?